So the trend now that's mirrored now by Pick and Pay, Checkers, all of these things analyze shopping trends, and these items grew by this amount of percentage. White rice, 186% growth. I don't know what that is. I can't even see it. Jik, 138%. Vodka, 104% growth in sales. Well, obviously, that must have been just before lockdown, because otherwise that's a problem. Oil, 55%. But now, during lockdown, one of the biggest items to be sold is hair coloring kits.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a very white person in lockdown thing to do.
I think it makes sense, because think of it. You know, before lockdown, you were running off and having your hair touched up and kept whatever color you wanted, like our good old former president across the border, Mugabe. Mm-hmm. And now suddenly you can't. We're going to see the gray hair.
Exactly. Or the brown hair when you really are blonde. The brown hair when you want to be a blonde or something. So Howard, I think maybe that's what you've got to look at in one of your webinars, is this whole keeping up the appearance thing during lockdown, you know?
So in fact, we are very specifically looking at this, because people's apparently eyelashes have fallen out, or at least their fake eyelashes have fallen out. Their eyebrows have gotten so bushy that they can't even go shopping with a mask on.
And balaclavas are all the rage, yeah.
Exactly, like people's hairs have come out suddenly, they've gone frizzy, you can see the real colors poking through. No one is coming out of lockdown ever at this rate until they can get their beauty therapy done.
Yeah.
But can you imagine how much they're saving, though? I know it's small consolation.
Look, I think someone told me the other day that in fact you discovered that the cost of living was very little. It's the cost of lifestyle that was really a lot.
So interesting. It is so true.
And that lockdown had proven that.
That is absolutely true. And I think that is fascinating. Look, I know that the amount of discussion in my house around nails and nail techniques and gelish versus something else and UV lights and...
Oh, your sons must stop that.
I know that, look, can I tell you that they're worse? Because them and their hair, they will not let anybody near them until this is all over and they can go back to their authorized hair dealer. I don't know whatever they're called nowadays.
Do they meet it in a darkened parking lot with their authorized hair dealer and swap colorings or a brush?
Something like that. I wouldn't mind just a little bit of a brush.
Or blade number one for their buzzing machine.
Yes.
I can't sympathize, I'm afraid, Howard. I invested years ago in a hair clipper.
Yes.
Years ago. So I have two of them. So for me, it's been absolutely swell. So once every 2 weeks, I just take two mirrors
and
I don't trim. I just remove everything.
Yeah,
so there's no science to it. It's just making sure that you leave nothing behind.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's it.
That's, yeah, it's very
so
different.
I feel nothing for it.
Yeah, it's the opposite to the chev. They leave no one behind. They what? They, oh no, they also leave no one behind. So that's also fine. Alright, so.
Luba, yes, must understand, with that attitude, he will never become the Kim Kardashian of his generation.
I'm surrounded by people who make sure the Kardashians are fabulously wealthy. I don't think I need to add to their fortunes, honestly.
Exactly.
I mean, I have to contend with the 15-year-old who was, you know, upset because she couldn't buy her nail accessories, and now that she can. I mean, do you know what this child tried? I mean, she faked purchases, and she even tried going through Amazon and everything under the sun. And I really feel nothing. Fortunately for me, if there's one smell I hate, it's that nail polish smell and nail polish remover. So I always tell everybody, if you want to do your nails, you're more than welcome to, but make sure that you do it very far from you.
Hmm. So, Michiel,
but Howard, here's a question I have for you.
Right.
You might have covered it. You know, I saw your article talking about working from home and people wanting that. How ready are people for working from home? It's one thing having a COVID-19 situation that forces you to work from home. I worry about productivity. You know, I think back at my life, you know, I was a boarder in primary school, in high school. When I got to varsity and I got freedom, I'm ashamed to say I abused it thoroughly, especially in the first year. I mean, I just about flanked everything there was to flank. And I do worry that are people ready to work at home and be as productive? Because there's nobody policing you. You know, you're not in the office at 8 o'clock. I know companies will try and check online and they'll try and find some ways to make sure you're doing the work, but you can basically get up and not shower and eat and work, and you can control your own hours. But the question that, you know, troubles me is everybody wired for that? Are they ready for it? And have they been trained for it? Because I do feel that can be terribly unproductive.
Yes. So let me answer the question, and then I'm interested in Howard's answer after that as well. Is certainly from my experience and some of the research that I've been doing is that, in fact, people are more productive because there's a caveat here, and that is that you can't look at this in isolation. It's got to be a culture-driven environment. That's got to be about what the culture of an organization is. So if it's an organization that is very driven, and we've spoken about it on the show, by this power distance. In other words, you've got somebody sitting and saying, do this, do that, do the next thing. And somebody goes very obediently and does that. And it's more of a sort of a parent-child thing. I think that you'll have a lot less productivity. Where you've got a situation where there's a narrower gap and people within the culture of the organization have learned to take responsibility, be responsible for the work that they're doing themselves, I think in this type of situation, you will get a higher productivity, but you'll get other problems that will follow. And those might be burnout. It might be the fact that you can't sustain it for so long, etc. So you'll have to deal with other issues that follow there. So every situation has its own style. How would your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a little more complex than that, because I think different personality types actually react differently to these sorts of environments. So extroverts who feed off the energy of other people, lockdown and working from home is a disaster for them. Introverts who are self-guided, who draw their energy from things, from computers, from programming, this is fine. They can continue with their day-to-day work without the distractions of other people around. But within creative environments, amongst people who are team orientated, who lead the energy around them to build on something better and the inputs of other people, I think this is disastrous. So I think part is the sort of work that you're doing, and part is the sort of personality that you have yourself. But I think this is the time for introverts who in a workplace are often kind of almost denigrated because they like their alone time. I think this is the time for introverts to shine.
Howard's a hybrid.
which Howard?
Which Howard?
Our host. Because let's put him on the couch for a second. I mean, if you were to ask me, I would say he's an incredible extrovert, but his radio work allows him to deal with people that he can't see face to face. And so for him, it's easy to move between the two. I mean, I think default, he would probably prefer human interaction. And that's my challenge, is that some of us are wired for that human contact and that human touch. And we struggle in dealing with somebody over a phone exclusively or even a video call. But I think that's why I'm saying that. I think Howard...
So I think you're right. I am a hybrid. And in fact... Because and another way to see that is through my writing. Is writing is a very lonely, isolated experience. You're not doing it with other people. You can't do it with other people. So yes, I think that I do get energized through people, through human interaction. But I am both, so I can move between the two. And Howard, you I think your point is valid as well. Is that it might depend on the person. So Nati, what do you think?
I'm also a hybrid, but Howard prefers human interaction, and I don't. Funny, because I'm an extrovert, but when I'm working, because I'm so independent, and I know know that all of this falls on me, I put that pressure on myself. So I'd rather work from home. And I have noticed also when I work from
home.
You're
not a team person. I think that's
not
your problem.
Exactly.
Wow.
I feel completely qualified to answer this question because I once did a year of psychology at university, which now doesn't make me an expert.
You're the expert in the room. So what are you saying?
I'm the expert. I have a psychology one from WITS. And I would ask
you passed though.
Strangely enough, I was one of the 10% of people who passed the course.
Okay, we'll take your view then.
But I think even though writing is such an isolating experience, if I were to psychoanalyze Howard Feldman, I would ask him, why does he do most of his writing while sitting in a coffee shop full of people?
And yes,
the answer
because I'm energized by
because
people.
Even
absolutely.
Seeing those people, even though what he's doing by himself, it's not a team effort. He needs those people around him, and that's what energizes him and allows him to write.
You're
I think that's true, because Howard has an audience when he writes. I mean, Howard, I can't get into your brain, but I would imagine that whatever article or blog you're putting out, in your mind, you know who you're writing to. So they may not physically be with you, but you certainly almost have an audience that you can almost touch and feel, and you know who you're writing to, and you know what responses you're going to get from them, but they may not be physically in proximity.
Mm. In our next episode, we'll be not only psychoanalyzing Howard Feldman, we'll be diagnosing his many mental maladies.
Right.
Who needs David Abramson? Exactly.
So who do we invoice? His wife for the studio?
Discovery. Discovery will pay for everything. Don't worry.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. Then I can go to town.
I don't know. That's not what I've heard. But all right. Time is 8:51. I'm Howard Feldman. This is Your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 Chai FM. Luba, quick question for you. What is the energy like in Cape Town given the amount of positive cases that are being reported out of the area?
Cape Town's a strange place, Howard. I don't think it's really affecting people, but you know, I do worry because a lot of it is repeating itself. I'll give you an example. Down the road, I've got two Woolies and two Pick and Pays that I frequent. The one Woolies was closed and it opened a day later. And then the other one was closed and it reopened. And then we're back to the other one being closed. And I do worry that the retail part of it is not helping the infections because, you know, I haven't heard anybody trying to trace the people. I mean, I go to all of these stores and I remember going there and they were closed and I was told, sorry. And the stores weren't even candid enough to say this is the issue. The security whispered to me and said, oh, they've got it. And I said, what do you mean the COVID-19? And I said, yes, somebody tested positive. So they quietly close, they disinfect, and they open a day later. Now, nobody is saying, have you been to the store? And I'm seeing in other places, so that does worry me in the sense that, I mean, if I take the ones that I visit, the Woolworths is closed twice, the Pick and Pay is closed twice. I've gone for runs. It's madness. I mean, it's almost like going to a club. You know, I've kept away from the beachfront and I'm running in back streets, but it's just busy. But I don't get a sense in Cape Town that Cape Townians are gripped by it, are worried about it. And that's a worrying thing. Everybody else talks about Cape Town being so high, but Cape Townians don't. I mean, I mentioned to you last time, I have a friend who's a doctor and he's like, why should I wear a mask? I don't wear one in theater. So it's a strange attitude. There's almost an indifference to what is happening around Cape Town. You know, one person even joked and said maybe Cape Town should go back to level 5, which in some ways, you know, might happen to us. But you don't get a sense of a concern, of panic. I look at neighborhood chats and people are just completely indifferent. It doesn't come up in the chats amongst Cape Townians at all. It's almost like an irrelevant stats that says we on the southern tip of South Africa or Africa. It's just there. And so what about it? Sadly,
so
that's what
that.
I'm just
saying. It is so fascinating that, that it's a big deal, but just yet somehow doesn't seem to be such a big deal.
It's a big deal to you, not to us. That's the crazy part.
It is a bit crazy, no?
It is. It just does not bother Cape Townians. I don't understand why.
I mean, it is terrifying because more than 50% of all the cases in South Africa come out of the Western Cape.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the breakdown of where in the Western Cape, the Tygerberg area has more than 1,000 cases. Khayelitsha has 834. Like, these areas are devastated and will be devastated for a period. And, you know, I think it's starting to come down to the town whereby we need to start breaking down per district and per neighborhood the stats. And places like Mpumalanga, who've been relatively free of cases, and the Northern Cape and the Free State, those are, it's time for them to get back to work. But it's not time for Tygerberg and Khayelitsha to get back to work at all. In fact, if anything, they should be going down to level 5 and the police and military should be moving in and enforcing a lockdown in those areas. And the same for Johannesburg. There are two areas of Johannesburg that are really the hot spots within Johannesburg, and we need to move them into more strict basis, while those areas where we're not seeing cases, we need to start lightening up. We must stop looking at this on a country or provincial or even city basis, and we must start breaking it down much more granularly, and that's the way we should be opening up the country.
Yeah.
A lot of discussion that I have picked up though amongst Cape Townians on social media and talking to people is the reasoning that's almost in denial, saying, you know what, TB has a high infection rate or mortality rate, and you know the murder rate in this country is generally higher. So it's almost a case of what's the big deal? You know, far more people die from other things than this issue. So, I mean, if I look at my mates who live around Cape Town on social media, Facebook, and just talking to people, that seems to be the issue. When I look at videos that people are posting, it's more the denial kind of video that's saying, let's open up, let's go back to life as normal. This is not a pandemic. This is not an issue. You know, we've had bigger plagues in the past globally. So it's almost that issue that this is a non-event. Let's get on with it. I mean, you quoted stats now, and I can tell you now that most people that I know, if I asked them and I said, where are the hotspots in Cape Town, they wouldn't be able to tell me. And they would probably travel to those hotspots without knowing it. There just isn't that level of concern. And that's what's alarming. It's difficult to you know, to put a lid on it. Remember, I think it was last week, when a taxi driver tested positive, and then he drove a taxi full of people to the Eastern Cape after he had tested positive 2 days later. And you know, that probably sums it up, that influence.
Absolutely. Guys, I'm sorry, we do need to leave it there. We are out of time. Thank you both for a fascinating conversation. I'd love to hear from you. 34519 or 061 895 1019.